welcome to a Monday edition of the Frank Beckman Show on 760 WJR. I'm Kathy Hoekstra, filling in for Frank Beckman, who gets to go golfing today. I am Kathy Hoekstra with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, but they let me take the morning off so I could come down to downtown Detroit and fill in for Frank Beckman. And what an honor. Dick Hafner, this is indeed an honor for anybody who is involved or has ever been involved in radio broadcasting. Being in the studios at WJR and having command of this very powerful microphone.
I know the
feeling.
Very
awesome.
I know the feeling.
Well, it's nice to finally see you in person and meet you in person, because I've, of course, heard you on the air.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I've heard of you guys.
I'm
especially
sure
on
you
Frank's
have.
Show. He makes reference for you guys all the time and gets an awful lot of material and supportive information from the Mackinac Center.
Right. And, of course, we're very beholden to Frank for that, and we appreciate it so much. And we have a lot on the slate today. Lots of kind people have agreed to step up and talk to me, do some interviews, including Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger, who we'll be talking with on the line after the next commercial break. Also, just very quickly, Dick, did you stay up and watch the end of the Red Wings game last night?
Yes, I did. That's a dangerous thing for me because my alarm goes off in the middle of the night.
Yeah, dark and early. Yes.
Yes, dark, but I couldn't resist.
Yeah,
and
that
I'm glad I did.
That was tough. I had to make a call when it was tied 3-3, and I said, you know, with my luck, I'm going to go to bed, and they'll end up winning, which is a good thing. So I think the key is just going to be to sleep whenever the Red Wings are on, and we'll win the Stanley Cup. All right, very quickly, as I mentioned, Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger going to be talking with us about, all kinds of activity he's got going on. We also have the gentleman who did the portrait of Jennifer Granholm, unveiled in Lansing last week. We're going to speak with him as well. If you had a chance to see the portrait, talk about the behind-the-scenes mechanisms that go into doing such a portrait for such a high-profile figure. Also, a lot of people want to know if I am related to former Congressman Pete Hoekstra. If I had a nickel for every time anybody asked me that question, I would be a very wealthy woman. Of course, a lot of people still ask me that, and we are going to be talking with the former congressman later in the program. We'll answer that burning question for you. Got a lot more going on, so stay with us. Again, Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman on WJR.
You're listening to the Frank Beckman Show on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman, who I believe is golfing today. But somebody who's not going to be out on the course today, I believe, somebody who's been extremely busy in Lansing, we have Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger. I think he's on his way to work. Good morning, Speaker Bolger.
Good morning, Kathy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for taking your time. I understand, as I mentioned, you have been super busy. Just when I thought I've caught up with everything going on in Lansing over the weekend, more news comes out, more things that you guys have been doing in the past week and in the upcoming week as far as education reform, as far as taxes, pensions, all kinds of stuff making headlines.
But we feel the urgency from our voters. So we feel that there's a big job to do. So we're trying to get after that and do that quickly. So we are certainly staying very busy.
Okay, let's talk about education. That's something that's been, as a matter of fact, the Detroit Free Press today has a big article talking about schools of choice, which, of course, is one element of the governor's plan to reform education in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we have a very active and strong education committee chair on Paul Scott, and he's hard at work with his committee in making sure that we tackle education reform, that we make sure the focus is about kids, and we make sure that the focus is on results.
Right. And, well, you know, you talk about things that the House has already done. For instance, the per pupil spending cuts, et cetera. How confident are you that when all is said and done, we are going to see the full slate of things that the governor wants to get done in final form? Are we going to see that all, or are we going to see things watered down a bit?
Well, it's my anticipation, it's my hope that we tackle real reform and that we really try to make sure that it is about those results and that we don't shy away from things because they're controversial. And I'm growing in confidence every day because of the strength of our caucus and the willingness to step up and to take tough votes to do the right thing. So I don't anticipate that things will be watered down by the House. In fact, but we will have differences with the governor. We don't take the governor's message and then implement it. We look to have our own say and do our own work. We are hard at work, and we're hard at work before the governor's message. He put his message in, and then what we do is we look to try to incorporate that, to work together. But again, just really keeping that focus, instead of the focus being about the legislature or the governor, the focus should be about our students and how we provide them the best opportunities and get them the best results.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about that is that's the same thing you're going to hear and that we are hearing from every side of this entire education reform debate. It's all about the kids. What about the folks, teachers' unions, et cetera, who think that you are shortchanging the kids by cutting per pupil spending? And another big one is shifting school aid funding, some of it, to community colleges and higher education. What do you say to folks who approach you and say you should not be stealing from our children and moving that money toward higher education?
Well, the first thing I do is I look at the Constitution, how the Constitution's written, and it clearly within the Constitution, the school aid fund can be used for higher education. The governor has put forward a vision that talks about education from being pre-kindergarten all the way through college. And so it's a continuum of education. That's what we have to look at. I do think that you have to listen to those who are talking about education reform and what they're saying. Because we don't have more money does not mean that we have less appreciation. And you have to look at what people are trying to defend. Quite often, those unions will try to defend the status quo. They don't want to see changes. Now, that being said, education funding reductions are not easy. They're not easy. They don't bring joy. But it's necessary that we bring our costs in line. And what we have to do is we have to look to our schools as partners. As the legislature, we have to look at the things that we can do to help them contain their costs to get those dollars to the classroom. If you look after what the House did last week with education funding, the state support will average a little over $7,300 per pupil in state support alone. That does not include federal dollars or local money. If you look at a class size of 25, that's over $183,000 for one classroom in support from the state. So the question becomes, how do we step forward and how do we work with our school districts to help make sure that those dollars do get to the classroom, that are impactful and are helpful to those kids, give them opportunities, but more money is not the answer.
Right. One quick thing about the school aid fund and shifting of funds. Some people probably don't even remember. There has been one time in the past in which the school aid fund money has been used other than K through 12 education spending. Governor Jennifer Granholm, $195 million in school aid fund money for community colleges. So it's not unprecedented, as we mentioned. Let's talk very quickly, because I want to get on to the pension tax. Of course, a lot of people talking about that. As far as the education reform goes, it sounds like for people who would like to see spending reduced, very, very nice cuts. How are we going to see even more of it in the future? I mean, you know, one of the things that gets talked about in the public arena, Michigan's teachers have some of the best public pensions around, among the highest paid in the nation. However, we do have some of the poorest taxpayers as measured by, per capita. So are we going to see even more serious cost aligning attention in future budget years as far as K-12 spending goes?
I do. Well, here's our hope is that what we do is we hit the reset button this year in the budget. We really bring those costs in line. We really bring our expenses in line with our revenue, something that's not been done in Lansing. Instead, Lansing has previously sought to go get more revenue to try to balance its budget. So the goal will be make tough decisions this year and put Michigan on a path for success, and then we can all grow out of it in future years. But again, there is the need in the interim with those funding reductions to make sure that those reforms are in place, that those costs can be contained. And that largely happens through benefit costs. That happens through health care cost containment. That does happen through things like tenure reform, making sure that we're doing things that set high expectations. I think we ought to have high expectations and get out of the way. But as schools look to, if they do have to make staffing adjustments, getting rid of things like last in, first out, where sometimes you've got your most talented teachers that have to be shown the door because they're the newest in the school. Instead, looking to make sure that the school districts have the opportunity to measure teacher performance and to do what's right for the kids, not to do what's right by union rules and trying to protect the most senior.
All right, let's move on to tax reform. Another big thing going on with you folks, of course, the pension tax on the minds of a lot of people, many people against taxing pensions in Michigan. Where do we stand with that? I understand it sounds like in the Senate they're having trouble finding a committee.
It has been assigned in the Senate committee.
Yes, it has.
Okay. It's their Reform and Reinvention Committee, which is appropriate because this is a true tax reform package. Some people want to pick one piece of it out and focus on that, but it really, you have to look at the overall reform. To that point, I would look at the state's rankings at the other end of this reform. If this reform is adopted and becomes law, the state will be in the top 20 for individuals, for businesses, and for senior citizens. It'll actually be in top 10 for senior citizens of states who have an income tax. So as you look, it's where will we be after this is implemented? And really the whole purpose of the tax reform plan is to make the tax as simple as possible, as fair as possible, and treat people the same. Today we have vastly special treatment, whether it's special business tax credits for a select few or exemptions for certain people. And so we're trying to get away from that. Now, it was complicated a little bit by trying to soften the phase-in, if you will. We have a couple grandfather clauses. One says if you're 67 years or older when this takes effect, you're not impacted on the income tax. We do not change pension treatment if you're 67 or older when this takes effect. That was because we heard from seniors that, to be fair, somebody who's reached that age of Social Security, who's well into retirement, you shouldn't change the rules. We understood that. There's another grandfather clause that says if you're in your 60s, we heard, the other thing we heard is you got to make sure that you protect low-income seniors. So if you're in your 60s when this takes effect, the first $20,000 for an individual, $40,000 of a couple will be exempt. And then going forward, once everybody hits age 67, because seniors have all sorts of different sources of income, the first $20,000 of any source of income for an individual, $40,000 for a couple, will be exempt. So it's still very generous to senior citizens,
but
seeks to treat people the same.
Right. So you have been able to obviously come up with sort of a lesser version of the pension tax than what Governor Snyder had proposed at the very beginning. How confident are you that what you were able to do in the House will make it through the Senate?
I'm confident. I know that it was difficult. So the Senate has its work cut out for them. But what you have to focus on is the biggest thing that we haven't even addressed yet is the tax reform to make Michigan more competitive to provide a job. That's what we were elected to do. I believe there were two main reasons that we were elected and the voters entrusted us with the power in the state of Michigan, and that is to make Michigan a better place to provide a job, attract more jobs for more Michiganders, and then to make sure that we rein in our expenses. We talked about that earlier with the budget. Make sure that we're not passing on debt to our kids and grandkids. So when you look at the tax reform package, right now Michigan has the 48th worst business tax competitiveness in the nation. And this would take us up again to make us top 20 overall when you look at the full picture. So it's very important that we adopt that. Now, we have the 48th worst business tax competitive climate and the 45th worst unemployment. I think those are very closely related, and that's why it's essential for us to eliminate the job-killing MBT and its surcharge.
Okay.
And so that's what this package does.
Okay. Well, and very quickly, I have a couple more questions, and then I'll let you go because I know you're busy. Any cuts that – it seems as if the governor is perfectly willing to sign off on any cuts that you and the Senate send up to him. Let's flip that around. Any particular cuts or any particular areas that the governor has not yet touched on that you would like to see get done in Lansing?
What the House put forward and has passed over to the Senate is $150 million general fund cut, but a total of $250 million in additional cuts beyond what the governor recommended. And we did that because of the changes in the tax reform plan. We said, let's take in less revenue. It's a net tax cut for Michiganders, this tax reform package is. So we have passed forward about $250 million in additional cuts beyond the governor's recommendation. So we are looking to make sure that we balance the books without seeking additional revenue. We're looking to make sure that we make sure that Michigan government lives within its means.
Gotcha. Okay. And revenue estimates, of course, May 16th. Do you anticipate any changes or any major, you know, roadblocks or whatever as far as what is coming out in the revenue estimates?
There certainly will be active conversation with Revenue Estimating Conference. Most of the indications are that there will be additional money from that because the economy is improving. That's where we want to see additional money come from, not from higher tax rates, but from an improving economy. But we've certainly heard from many who would like to have that money go to K-12. But I think that we have to be careful. We have to do a couple things. We have to make sure that we're not spending money that's not there, so we have to take money back later. So we have to first make sure that we're very judicious with the money. The second is we have to just not give money to do the same old, same old. So if we're going to provide additional money, I think we ought to make sure that we look to reduce pension obligations and or reward best practices, incentivize our school districts, those who can help contain their costs, and make sure that money just doesn't go in one door and out the other for continuing business as usual, but make sure that we really change the dynamic and help improve education.
Okay, very quickly, I want to touch on a completely different topic, that is transparency. I know the House earlier this year put the names and salaries of all your staff on the internet. Of course, this is a very good thing. We've always said that the sunshine is the best disinfectant. That being said, I do understand Representative Pete Lund for a while has been pitching a bill that would lift the FOIA exemption for names and salaries of state politicians, not just House members. Will we see any action on this bill? What do you think of that? I mean, right now, as the law is, it allows you to hide the names and salaries of staff even more than Kwame Kilpatrick could when he was in office.
I know that Representative Lund is very passionate about it, as is Representative McMillan, making sure that we have transparency throughout government. And so I think you're seeing where the House is, and that is we're not going to wait even for a law. We're just going to go forward, and we're going to make sure that every citizen in Michigan at any hour of the day can watch how every dollar is spent in the House of Representatives. I look forward to going forward and working with Representative Lund on his bill, as well as Representative McMillan on several of his, to make sure that we do open that, because I would agree with your statement. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. We should not seek to hide from our citizens. Instead, we should view them as our bosses and report to them everything that we do.
All right. And very quickly, what can we expect coming up this week? We're running real short on time here.
We'll continue the budget work this week, make sure that we work with that with the Senate. We'll look forward to working with the Senate on adoption of tax reform. And there'll be a couple other things that we look for with regard to education reform as well.
Okay. Well, we will be keeping a close eye on you. Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger, thank you so much for taking time with us here on the Frank Beckman Show.
Very nice to talk with you, Kathy. Take care.
Again, Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger taking some time from his very busy schedule. Got a busy week ahead of him this week in Lansing. Still to come on the Frank Beckman Show, we have Congressman Justin Amash, freshman congressman, making a lot of noise out in Washington, D.C. We'll find out if the Beltway is having any effect on him. And we touched on education a little bit with Speaker Bolger. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we have a very unique and innovative lady, Dr. Christine Beardsley from the Oscoda Schools. Wait until you hear what she is doing up in the Oscoda School District. This is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. And now for the WJR LaFontaine Buick GMC Weather Center forecast. Today, boy, what a great day for a Monday. Lots of sunshine, a high near 70. Meteorologist John McMurray telling us tonight, partly cloudy, low 50 to 52. For tomorrow, some sunshine. We may have a few late day showers, high 70 to 72. And for Wednesday, showers and some thunderstorms moving in, 75 to 78. Right now it's partly cloudy, 56 degrees. And again, I'm Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman here at WJR. Still working to keep you the most informed radio audience in all of Michigan and elsewhere. So thanks for letting me in and having me along. Still to come on the Frank Beckman Show, we're going to be speaking with Congressman Justin Amash shortly, talking about his time in Washington, how things are going there. He's making a lot of noise out there, of course. And coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we have some great folks, Dr. Christine Beardsley of the Oscoda School District. Wait till you hear what she's doing there. She's a pioneering lady. And she's doing some things that you just won't believe. And we also are scheduled to talk with Congressman Pete Hoekstra find out if he and I are actually related, like a lot of people think we are, and a lot of people accuse us of being related, too. So we'll find out, and then also talk with him about some more serious things going on. We will be right back. This is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR.
Hi, I'm David Hall from Hall Financial, and if you're listening online right now, well, you're going to want to listen to this great offer that we've got for you today. There's three reasons you might want to call Hall Financial right now. One, you're paying over 5% on your home loan, and you want to lower your payment today. Two, you're on an adjustable rate loan, and you want to lock in a low fixed rate. Or three, you've been out looking at homes, and you want to know exactly what the payment would be on the house that you're thinking of purchasing and how much you have to put down. Well, call Hall Financial right now at 800-701-HALL. Let us know you heard us online, and we're going to waive $350 off your closing costs, the cost of an appraisal. Call 800-701-HALL, and we're going to waive $350 off your closing costs right now, the cost of an appraisal. Or you can visit us online, DavidHallMortgage.com. That's DavidHallMortgage.com. Call today. Take advantage of this great offer for listening online from Hall Financial. 800-701-HALL. Call today.
This problem is out of control. If you've said that about a loved one's alcohol or drug use, there is something you can do. You can make one phone call to the Betty Ford Center.
There's one truly grand place for an unforgettable summer family vacation, reunion, wedding anniversary, or birthday get-together. A place as memorable as the event itself. Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island, one of the most beautiful resort hotels in the world. An overnight stay includes accommodations in one of 385 guest rooms, each uniquely decorated by New York interior designer Carlton Varney. Exceptional dining with a full breakfast and five-course dinner daily included, and numerous activities including golf on the Jewel, tennis, swimming in the Esther Williams swimming pool, visiting Astor Spa, enjoying the hotel's dozen shops, relaxing in a rocking chair on the world's longest porch, or exploring Mackinac Island's rich heritage and natural beauty by foot, bicycle, horseback, or horse and carriage. For details on how Grand Hotel can accommodate your special event, visit GrandHotel.com or call 1-800-33-GRAND, 1-800-33-GRAND. Grand Hotel, America's summer place.
And it's only $59.95 per month. Since I made the switch, my business has exactly what it needs. Internet that moves as fast as we do, and at a price I can feel good about. So really, have you looked at your bill yet?
Call 1-800-391-3000 today to switch to Comcast Business Class. Go to business.comcast.com/save and find out how much your business could save. Restrictions apply. Include starter internet. Early termination fee applies. Equipment, installation, taxes, and fees extra.
Top auto designers and executives are attending the Ward's Auto Interiors Conference on May 17th at the Henry Hotel in Dearborn. Don't miss your chance to network with decision makers and find out what the future holds for automotive interiors. You'll see keynote speaker Ralph Gilles of Chrysler and other top execs from companies like Ford, General Motors, Toyota, Hyundai, and more. Seating is limited, so go online to register now. Visit autointeriors.com to save your spot for the Auto Interiors Conference on May 17th in Dearborn. Autointeriors.com.
Is the constant hum of the left wing starting to get to you?
Harry's not the flashiest guy.
No. Sean Hannity will shout it out.
It's the middle class working people losing their jobs. They're the ones that are suffering the most.
Hannity, afternoons 3 to 5 on WJR. You're listening to the Frank Beckman Show on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show here on WJR. I'm Kathy Hoekstra of the Mackinac Center, filling in for Frank on this gorgeous Monday morning. Well, many folks in the political world see our next guest as either a breath of fresh air or even a thorn in the sides of the Republican establishment in Congress. Now, when you hear the soundbite we're about to play for you, you can see why some people might come up with views on both sides.
I want to say one other thing about ideology. I think there is at play here some folks who would rather play off on their own agendas than what is best for the state and the people of Michigan. And, you know, we can all name names here. I'm going to give you one. We already said Nancy to death. Justin Amash. This is a guy from our side of the state. He is committed to no incentives.
Are you listening to her? Calling out
the idea being that if we get rid of all incentive programs, then we can get rid of the Michigan business tax. We won't have to tax our businesses to pay incentives. Therefore, get rid of all incentives. Now, this is a gentleman to whom there is no compromise.
And joining us on the Frank Beckman Show right now is that gentleman for whom there is no compromise, Congressman Justin Amash. Welcome to the Frank Beckman Show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I don't know if you remember that soundbite. That was from August of 2009, the rally in Lansing in support of the film subsidies. Is that a lady pointed out that was Deb Havens, I believe, a West Michigan film industry supporter. And you were a member of the Michigan House at the time. You staunchly opposed the film and other targeted tax incentives. And as she stated, you will not compromise. You took that as a compliment, didn't you?
Absolutely. I don't think we should be compromising in the wrong direction. All of the compromises we generally talk about when we're in political office are compromises in the wrong direction. If someone wants to talk about a decrease in government and we are compromising to decrease at least in that direction or going in the right direction, then I'm willing to talk about it. But we keep growing government. Usually one party offers a huge expansion of the debt. The other party offers a small expansion of the debt, and we end up somewhere in the middle.
Sure, and you, of course, you came from Michigan, which perhaps you could treat as a microcosm of what is happening in our nation, so you have a little bit of experience there. Now that you're in Washington, though, a lot of folks back here in Michigan want to know if this no-compromise attitude has changed. Of course, I'm inclined to say no, given that you were called cowardly by none other than Greta Van Susteren for your present vote on defunding NPR. Is this the case?
You should never compromise your principles, and I won't compromise my principles, and I think that's what some people object to, the fact that I won't compromise those principles. It's okay to discuss legislation. It's okay to come to some agreement somewhere where we're moving in the right direction. But when you're asked to sell out your principles, that's something I can't do and will never do.
And here's what I want to know. What kind of pressure do you get in D.C.? I mean, do you get high-pressure lobbyists putting the squeeze on you, showing up, you know, at your door, threats? I mean, I don't know how this works in Washington. You have thugs waiting in the dark wings of the Capitol building?
You get all sorts of pressure, and it's ratcheted up as compared to the state house. You get a lot more phone calls. You get a lot more subtle threats, and a lot more people expect you to be with them 100% of the time. So if you don't, if you stray from them on 1% of the votes, then you've committed a crime. So I think there is that pressure, and I fight against it, and I stick to my guns.
All right, and Congressman Justin Amash, you made a name for yourself with your Facebook activity as a state rep and your transparency here in Michigan. You've kept up that drumbeat in Washington. Do you get any establishment-type GOP members pull you aside and say, hey, Justin, knock it off? I mean, do you have Speaker Boehner or Mike Pence from Indiana or even Michelle Bachmann just saying, hey, Justin, cut it out. You're making the rest of us look bad.
I haven't had any of that from our leadership. Our leadership's been pretty good about it. In fact, they're the ones who instituted the new rules, which allowed me to use my iPad on the floor so that I could explain my votes. So I really appreciated that. I have received some of that from some of my colleagues. They're usually doing it half joking, but I think deep down a few of them are worried about where we're going with this and that I'm exposing some of the stuff that they don't really want exposed.
All right. Well, we think you're doing great things by putting all of your votes online and Facebook, et cetera, keeping everybody informed. Very quickly, Washington Examiner referred to you as a, quote, small government heartthrob, as they did a piece on your present vote on defunding NPR. Do you prefer to be a coward or a heartthrob?
Well, I guess I prefer to be a heartthrob, but I'm definitely small government. I don't know about the heartthrob part, and I'm certainly not a coward, I think.
I do know the editor of the Washington Examiner. I'll have to find out the thinking behind that particular description. Very quickly, before we let you go today, what's on your plate right now in Washington that we need to know about back here in Michigan?
Well, I'm still pushing this bill to require congressional authorization for the use of force in Libya. I think we're reaching a dangerous point with our government where the president can go start a war without any congressional approval. And so I'm calling on the president to stop the activities. I'm calling on congressional leaders to say, hey, we need to approve this kind of stuff before we go to war.
All right. Congressman Justin Amash, we appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to work out in the Beltway out there in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Kathy. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. And I am Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank Beckman here on WJR. Coming up, we'll talk with the gentleman who did the portrait of Governor Jennifer Granholm unveiled last week at the Capitol building. This is WJR. And welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show here on WJR. Again, Kathy Hoekstra filling in for Frank. And we have somebody on the line with us. Perhaps you saw last week something, a tradition in Lansing, the outgoing governor, the previous governor, will have a portrait done of him or herself in this case. And it is hung in the Capitol Rotunda. And last week, the portrait of former Governor Jennifer Granholm was unveiled amid great fanfare and pomp and circumstance. And we are very happy to have on the line with us Charles Pompilius, who is the artist who did the portrait of Jennifer Granholm. Charles, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you are a full-time painter, and as it says on your website, that you work primarily with the human figure. Talk about how this came to be. I understand this portrait of Jennifer Granholm was a work more than a year in the works, correct?
That's right. It started a year ago last April. We had a lot of sessions in the governor's office, mostly in Lansing, involved sketching, getting to know the governor, talking about her ideas for the portrait. It included taking photographs, which I then developed later in my studio in Ferndale, and was followed up with numerous meetings to bring about the portrait that you see here today.
Now, had you ever done any portraits of a political figure?
Not a political figure, no.
Okay.
No.
So how did you approach this particular portrait? What did you do for inspiration? Did you take a look at the previous governor's portraits that are already up, or how did you even set about doing this?
Well, yeah, I did spend a lot of time in the rotunda looking at the previous portraits, but more than that, I just tried to approach it with very little preconception. And as with any portrait, you're trying to get across an idea of who the person is that you're painting. So I just listened to the governor very closely, what her ideas were. She had very good ideas. She had a good, strong sense of how a painting can communicate in a way that words cannot. So it was collaborative. We worked together. And that's how it came about.
Okay. Now, this portrait, there have been some articles written about it, pointing out some notable items in the portrait. It was very prop heavy. I know the governor was big on symbolism in her portrait. Something that was also different and pointed out, different from the previous governors, is that instead of looking right at the painter or the viewer in this case.
Yeah.
She was sort of gazing out the window. Was that her idea or yours?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, we went back and forth with a lot of different ideas, but I think she did comment that she wanted to be looking out into Michigan's future is how she thought of it. So that was coming largely from her.
Okay, that was going to be, yeah, my question is if she indicated what she had intended by facing not directly the painter, but out the window. What is it, as far as your work is concerned with this portrait, what is it you want people to take away upon looking at this portrait?
Well, again, the idea is to communicate what the governor's concept was of her time in office, and I think what I would like people to take away is what's communicated through how she's represented and the symbols or the props that exist around her.
Okay, well, and let's some of those props, very, of course, notable. She had gazing out the window. She had her hand on a globe,
mm-hmm.
And some various props sitting on the table. A little miniature Chevy Volt, a wind turbine, and a shovel propped up against the bookcase in the back. Those are things, of course, she felt very proud of during her administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she wanted to talk about her efforts to lead Michigan forward from its heavy industrial heritage, as represented by the Rouge Plant mm-hmm. painting in the background, towards a new greener technology and her role in bringing international companies to Michigan, as represented by the globe.
Okay. In something like this, you know, I just have to ask, is were you a supporter of Governor Granholm before you did the portrait, or were you just Ferndale artist Charles who had the honor and privilege to be asked to do a portrait?
Well, you know, I have to say that I really liked working with the governor. She's a great person. I was a supporter. But approaching the portrait, I would say, was entirely nonpartisan. I'd be happy to work with anybody and paint anybody's portrait.
Okay. That was leading into my next question is, as the artist who did the portrait, boy, what if the Chevy Volt and wind energy don't catch on in Michigan? Is that going to be part of your legacy as the artist who did the picture?
I guess we all get either the credit or the blame.
Okay. Anything else you want to share with us about this experience? Would you do it again for Governor Snyder?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Governor Snyder was at the unveiling, and I enjoyed hearing him talk. And, yeah, I would love to paint Governor Snyder and anybody else, high or low, that wants to portrait paint it. I just love painting people, and I really enjoyed this. This is a unique experience for me. It was very high profile. She's a great person to work with. And I would love to do more of these kinds of portraits as well.
Okay. Well, Charles, very quickly, how can people get a look at the other work that you've done? I mean, now that your name is sort of in the spotlight for a while here in Michigan, why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, I have a website. You could see my work at the David Klein Gallery in Birmingham. And if you simply do it, a search on my name, you can see the two websites that I have that represent my work.
All right. Well, Charles Pompilius, we appreciate taking the time this morning to chat with us, and much success on your career, of course, which you've had much success over the years. But again, we appreciate it, and we hope we'll be interested to see what sort of reaction your portrait gets and in the days, weeks, and months to come.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, too, and thanks a lot, Kathy. I really enjoyed it.
All right. You take care. And you are listening to The Frank Beckman Show on WJR. Now, hour one of The Frank Beckman Show here on WJR wrapping up. I'm Kathy Hoekstra sitting in for Frank Beckman on this fine Monday morning. He's out golfing, of all things. I don't blame him. Coming up in the next hour, we've got the superintendent of Oscoda Schools joining us. Little district up in the northeastern part of the Lower Peninsula doing some innovative things that you probably never heard of and never believed were possible. Also, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra scheduled to join us in the 10 o'clock hour. He can tell us about his thoughts on the Bin Laden situation, of course, as the chairman of the House Subcommittee on Intelligence during his time in Washington. And he'll answer the burning question if he and I are actually related. Stay with us. This is The Frank Beckman Show on WJR.